Now, education matters. Stopping the brain drain and what you might be well to introduce your children to this summer. What can you do with kids during the hot summer months when they're on holiday? Education Matters is next.
This is Education Matters.
Education Matters.
On Drive Live.
Two guests. Helen O'Neill is back with us, General Manager at Bonus McFarlane Education. Helen, it's nice to have you back. Good to see you.
It's nice to be back. Thank you.
At least you came back, which is important. Of course, we like to welcome guests that have been here once. And also, David A. Lee is with us, lead consultant and clinical psychologist at Kamali Clinic. David, good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Nice to
My
have
pleasure
you here.
To be here.
So we're going to be talking about children and what they should be doing during the summer, but we had to start with one of the opening gambits in the notes that you sent through, Helen. Regardless of age, no student should spend the whole summer without doing any studying. So we thought we'd leave that hanging in the air.
She'd get beaten up in the playground for that one, wouldn't she?
You would. No, she wouldn't. Take 10 paces over there. What do you mean by that? Because it's not as though children shouldn't be unwinding, but is there anything reading between the lines there?
I think that comment comes mainly from my background as a teacher.
Right.
So I used to be a maths teacher, and come September, when you have your kids back in the classroom and you start with something you think is an easy topic and you just get blank faces staring at you.
Okay.
And I think it's especially poignant for those students who are in GCSE or A-level or IB years. They really cannot afford to have a whole 10 weeks of not studying. Because they'll either forget stuff they've done before, or if they've got those areas of weakness, it's a prime time that they can focus on them and be prepared for the next school year. When you do not have time during your hectic school day and then all the after-school activities to spend time to focus on those little misconceptions or knowledge gaps that you might have. So the summer is when you really should use that time, revise, study. I'm not saying the whole summer. I'm not saying you should go the whole 10 weeks, not have a break, mm-hmm. and do nothing but study.
I'm not saying anything. I'm listening.
No, well, yeah, he is. Look,
I know, really, he's looking at me.
You're waiting for summer school. I mean, I guess what I would say is, isn't the summer time for children's brains to breathe a little bit, maybe think about creative stuff and rest so that they can absorb more the next school year?
I think to an extent. So a lot of the students I work with, they tend to have July off, so they'll have break in July, but then come August, just start doing, if they're younger, just maybe start doing a little bit of maths and English a few times a week, maybe half an hour here, half an hour there. But all students should be reading regardless. And reading isn't a hardship either, but that's still something that keeps kids' brains ticking over, keeps students' minds active, mm-hmm. and they're still learning. But that isn't a hardship. That should be a general part of their days anyway.
Let me introduce you to my 14-year-old son. And he'll
tell you if it's a hardship or not, yes.
Let me put the same question to you, David. Should the summer be just a switch-off time for kids? Or should they be, as Helen's kind of indicated, this is not to work your way through the summer. You're not setting, you know, rigid goals here. This is just kind of tuning up, I suppose, for the new school year. But shouldn't kids just completely switch off and do something else and come back fresh?
I don't think so, Tim. I'm inclined to agree with what Helen said there, but I think we really need to define what we mean by studying. And I think sometimes we can take studying quite literally to mean as we do in the classroom, following a formal curriculum. And I agree with Helen that I think reading should always be on the agenda. And I think there's a balance to be had, because I think over the summer months, I think it is useful for children to be able to let their hair down, to be able to, you know, breathe, relax, engage in creative activities. But at the same time, they can still be learning. And I'm a big advocate for reading as well. I think that's something that, you know, as parents, certainly we should keep on the agenda with our children at all times.
Yeah, I mean, hearing when you sort of deliver it in that way, I mean, reading would be something I assume I can remember being encouraged to do throughout holidays, and you have more time to do it and enjoy it. So if we're not talking about getting the textbook out, Helen, we're talking about maybe setting our children something that brings arithmetic into it, maybe, or encouraging them to talk about the books they're reading. So there's a little bit of analysis of the English there. Are we looking at a softer side?
Definitely. I think especially with younger students, you don't have to make it quite so structured. I think a lot of parents sometimes don't quite realise the importance of things like times tables. Now, that is so important for kids to be able to access so much of maths. you can be, a lot of people take long car journeys in the summer. You can spend those car journeys just throwing
out
some...
spy in your house.
No, but you can make it fun is what I'm saying. You can be in a shop. Yeah. You can ask your child to add up a couple of things, just little things like that, so they don't associate it necessarily with studying, but you're still testing them. You're still keeping that mental math, that mental arithmetic going. And I think that's so important.
I do remember being encouraged to keep a diary one summer. And I guess that is, you know, you're practicing, you're reading, you're writing, your, you know, comprehension, I guess. Is it things like that? Are we looking for things like that that maybe allow them to be a bit more creative with their learning, David?
I think so. And I think keeping a diary or a journal is a great idea. And I think it's really about how we pitch the activities to children. And I think if we can do that in a creative way, even with you know, mathematics, numerical reasoning, all those kind of things, it's how you pitch it to the children. And sometimes when you say, right, we're going to sit down and study now, get the books out, it doesn't make it fun. If we can make it creative and weave it into other activities, then I think, you know, we're on to a win.
It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing, isn't it?
It's not.
Because if I said to my son, let's keep a diary this summer, I know I'd get a what? And then nothing.
So what,
absolutely.
So that's what do your children do over the summer?
I'd ask their mother. I haven't got a clue. No, I mean, lots of different things. I think quite naturally, lots of parents would do the... what's, you know, 5 times 5 in the car on a journey, looking at the number of miles left and 5 towns to go through. There are lots of parents that would do that and work that into conversation, almost subconsciously, I think, because they're thinking about, you know, where their kids are in school. So that's maybe one thing. I was just wondering, though, one of the things that I guess lots of parents are guilty of, particularly here during term time, is they schedule their children to the hilt. So there's always an activity.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
Always something going on.
Yeah.
And if you do that in the summer... I wonder if that doesn't allow them a break. Shouldn't kids have the time to just do nothing and even, heaven forbid, be bored?
I think it's about balance, personally, and I agree. I think some parents are what we call hyper-parents. They are guilty of hyper-parenting. And what they do is they over-schedule their children, and that's not always a good thing, because actually what actually happens, children don't learn and develop a sense of autonomy. They don't learn to satisfy their own curiosity, to use their own initiative, if they're overscheduled. So if it's just a case of mum and dad setting the schedule and every night of the week we've got a different activity or 3 or 4 activities to do, and then we come home and do homework, it's really difficult for the child to actually take some lead for that and some autonomy. And I actually think that, you know, during the summer months, that's a great way to empower children to actually take that initiative.
Can you talk a bit about that? Because you mentioned in your notes about them taking initiative, using creative thinking. So if you allow your kid to be bored, which is what a lot of parents are trying to avoid, so it's kind of seems a bit counterintuitive, but if you allow them to have that time where maybe they get bored, what then happens, David, which is so beneficial?
Well, I think actually boredom is the catalyst for creativity. And, you know, there's lots of research into this. So, for example, I'm going to just quote a study here. Dr. Teresa Belton in the UK at the University of East Anglia, the School of Education and Lifelong Learning, actually did some research whereby she interviewed authors and artists and scientists and actually got them to talk about their childhood. And she explored this concept of boredom in childhood. And it seems to be a very, very common factor that in creative individuals, that they did spend quite substantial periods of their childhood being in a bored state. So actually having to spend time in what we call a stand and stare state, where they're actually encouraged to use their own initiative, they're actually propelled in a way to, you know, to think creatively, because that's not being done for them. You know, there's no agenda actually being imposed on them.
So you can, if you kind of willfully ignore your children, I'm not saying you should, but if it saying to your child, look, don't bug me, go and find something to do, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Not necessarily, but again, it's how you communicate.
The phrasing
that to
your was child. Poor there, I'll give you that, don't you?
Stop bothering me and go away.
Yeah, don't do that. I'm busy.
Go and sit in the room on your own.
But look, I'm doing something here. Yeah. I will come to you in a minute. But in the meantime, go and play a game. Do something.
Absolutely.
Use your own imagination.
Let's think about how we want to use this time. Right. Maybe we could sit down a little bit later on and do an activity together. But really, you know, it's about empowering our children to start to you know, think in an autonomous way and use their own initiative and, yeah, to be creative. Mm.
So a few messages coming in on this one, Tim. A rumour says, my lad's 5 and I'm more keen about keeping his mental agility on a high. He reads and writes quite regularly and we play maths when we are together. Languages, music, chess. That would be good stuff to get him into this summer, methinks. Thank you for that, a rumour. And Shannon says, when our kids were younger, and even still now, in the summer evenings, we played regular board games of Scrabble for vocabulary building and Monopoly for mathematics skills. Thank you for that, Shannon. 4001 if you want to add yours. Helen, Scrabble, Monopoly?
Perfect. We used to, when I was a teacher, we used to use, with the low ability sets, we used to use Monopoly to help them, they didn't realise what they were doing, but help them access and do some mathematics as well. I'm an advocate of anything that gets a child's brain stimulated and thinking. And also, it's perfect for family time.
Okay. Education Matters today, stopping the brain drain over the summer, what to do with kids during the summer. Our guests are David Ailey, lead consultant, clinical psychologist at Kamali Clinic, and you just heard her there, Helen O'Neill, general manager at Bonus McFarlane Education. We have more next.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are stretching our brains this afternoon on Education Matters here on Drive Live. Tim and Claire with you this afternoon. We're talking about how to keep our children's brains from, well, turning to mush, really, over the summer holidays. Dr. David A. Lee, clinical psychologist from Kamali Clinic, is in the studio with us, and Helen O'Neill from Bonus McFarlane Education. And Helen, we were talking there before the break about the theory that you have of keeping children's brains entertained over the summer, and in particular actually doing something that's close to schoolwork but maybe disguised. We've had a message in sort of saying, doesn't it depend on the school year that they're in? So I wanted to ask you about what's appropriate at different ages.
Yes, definitely. I think a lot of what we've spoken about in the last 15 minutes has been more applicable maybe to younger students. So by the time students, as I think I mentioned earlier, reach their examination years, so their GCSE years or their IB, A-levels, they need to start doing a little bit more structured work. That is when they do need to get a textbook out and start looking and making sure they're completely on top of their previous year. That's essential for them so they don't get caught out nearer their exams. If a student is prepared when they have their examinations, it's fantastic because then all they will be doing is revision. A student really should be looking through their syllabus, which you can find online, looking to check that they understand all of the things that they should know from the previous year, and if they can get on top of stuff for the next year, even better. And if there isn't, if there's areas they don't understand, then they can work with a family member, a friend, or if they need to, that's when they should seek out maybe private tuition, anything like that. They need to make sure they're prepared for their next year.
I'm interested in how many students would actually do that, the percentage that would do that. But, I mean, it makes an awful lot of sense. But, you know, as a parent, that's one of your jobs, isn't it? You've got to say to your child and start to understand as your child is older that, hold on, this is actually now down to you. For a lot of parents, I would guess, David, it's kind of hard because that's your child growing up, but you have to let go. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely. You do. And in many ways, I think the summer is a good time for parents to spend time with their children and, you know, to nurture their learning, their creativity. I might sort of deviate a little bit from what Helen was saying there, because for me it's not just about, you know, formal curriculum and formal learning. I think there are all sorts of ways that we can get children to interact and to learn from their social experiences, the social and emotional experience, which brings me onto the idea of summer camps, which are, you know, are common here in the UAE, which is something I certainly advocate, and kind of something that we've just started this summer at Kamali Clinic for children aged 6 to 12 years. It's a 10-week program. And I advocate this because it's all about learning in kind of a fun way. It's not just about, you know, learning from books. It's not formal curriculum. It's about interacting with other children. It can be about drama, arts, craft, and developing social skills as well, which is, you know, still part of, it's social intelligence, emotional intelligence.
We've got one come in here, David. I'd be interested to know what your answer is. Well, and Helen too, actually. And then Tim's thoughts on it with his son. Just bought my son a gaming console after a long battle with my wife over it. Is gaming healthy for kids? How much of it is okay? And can it be integrated into a summer study programme? Over to you, David.
Again, I mean, this is something I feel very passionately about, is that we need to, you know, set boundaries around screen time. Too much time spent with devices, whether that's iPads, whether it's games consoles, whether it's the TV screen, isn't a good thing. But within limits, you know, playing games can be fun. Playing games can be done within the family. Mum and dad can play games with their children. You know, coming back to some of Helen's points, I think technology can be used creatively for learning as well. But I think it's all about moderation. It's all about that balance. So, you know, I'm not in favour of giving a child a games console and saying you can sit down for the
go
summer.
Go away and be quiet for a while, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll come to you in a minute, Tim. Yeah. Helen, do you agree?
I agree completely. I think moderation and balance are the key words there.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And over to the parent of a nearly teenage son.
I think it's both a bribe and a reward in equal measure. No, I'm with you, but I think it's, you know, kids that spend too much time in their rooms. My son has no TV, no console in his room. He has a phone, but the PlayStation is downstairs, and whenever he wants to play, do stuff online, it's mainly football, to be honest with you, but he will always ask, and then he's told in no uncertain terms by his mother, who is very much in charge, that that's enough time, and he'll try and get more, but it is sort of limited. But it is that thing where if you don't know what they're doing, at least we kind of know what he's up to.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So, but it is hard.
But
too much time
games.
On any screen, you goggle-eyed, aren't you? Simple. Anybody's like that.
Absolutely. But there are some games on the iPad or the games console that actually can be quite educational as well, can't they?
Absolutely.
Or are they not the ones he's playing? What's FIFA like for mathematics and English training?
Well, if he was going to be a drone operator, maybe. I don't know that that's going to be his career.
But maybe, Helen, you could encourage your child who's into gaming to spend some time on a computer program that is somehow educational. Would that be a way round it?
Definitely. And I think you get a lot of kids, especially now, who are interested in computing and programming, and that can integrate again into their, because like you said, you don't want too much screen time, but if their interest and what they're looking to do in the future is around a screen and is then programming and developing, that's when you maybe hit a bit of a grey area.
If I said to you, part of it is because it's online gaming and you're playing a team sport, perhaps with a few different people in a group, say a football match, and you're playing as a certain player and there are 11 of you in the group, could you justify that in any way, David, as being part of social interaction? I know you're not face-to-face, but there's an element of interaction there, isn't there?
Look, I think we have to accept that, you know, society is only going to move more and more in this direction. Mm. And, you know, digital technology, screens, it's part of the 21st century. It's certainly going to be more and more a part of the 22nd century as we move forward. Now, if we think about our own world as adults, it's becoming much more technology-based again. We have teleconferences, we communicate via Skype, we have meetings online, webinars, webcasts. So we need to accept this. Now, again, I think it comes back to the concept of balance, because if we take away from, you know, face-to-face interaction, that's not a good thing. So we have to accept that some of our children will be interacting with other children online, playing games, etc., but they need one-to-one face-to-face time with other children as well.
So if your son and daughter say to you, or daughter, son or daughter say to you, I'm off to the mall to see my friends, you shouldn't always just say no.
I don't think so, because that's, you know, they're using those experiences to kind of walk around, to talk, to affiliate. I'm encouraging of that, because it's getting them out, it's getting them interacting, and not just staring at a screen.
They could be using their mathematics skills while they spend your money, Tim.
Yeah, that's surely going to happen. Thanks very much.
That is all we've got time for on Education Matters this week. Thank you so much to our guest, Dr. David Ailey, clinical psychologist at Kamali Clinic. Thanks for coming in. And Helen O'Neill, of course, from Bonus McFarlane Education. Really interesting discussion with them this week.